Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It is the 8th of February. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link, a program that brings you news from around the continent. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. In today's program, over 2 million people in dire need of food as severe famine hit Zimbabwe. Analysts say government has been slow to act.
It is about a natural disaster. In fact, if anything, I would have expected a discussion that speaks to climate change.
Another deadline passed as no sight of a transitional government in South Sudan.
Please form the government and then you discuss the issue of your 28th state, because we, all of us, the people, we should not be held hostage of what we don't know.
And DRC are the African nations champions after beating Mali 3-0. Stay tuned.
Top story.
We start in Southern Africa, where the rate of famine is becoming more and more desperate. The UN World Food Programme reports that 14 million people are in dire need of food. Zimbabwe is the most hit in the region. More than a quarter of its 13 million people are facing food shortages as the country is suffering from a severe drought, the kind of which was last seen in 2000. Privilege Mushwani visited a rural village badly affected by the drought and filed this report.
This visibly malnourished cow could be mooing for the last time. The owner could slaughter it out of desperation. There is hardly any pasture left and water has become scarce. Such is the situation in rural Chivi in Masvingo province, 400 kilometers south of Zimbabwe's capital, Harare. Masvingo is located in a region of Zimbabwe where rainfall is minimal and uncertain. This has been worsened by the El Nino weather phenomenon that is affecting the entire Southern African region. Speaking to DW, one elderly couple from Adzivadondo in Machivi, 92-year-old Elijah and his blind wife Agneta Zidzai, painted a grim picture of their situation.
It's scorching hot. We received a little rain a long time ago, but not even a single drop recently. We're just waiting and desperate.
There is nothing we can do. I'm always wondering what we can do. But right now, we are only looking up to God for help. If we die, just take shovels and bury us.
Zimbabwe's farming season begins in October, ending in April, but the rains came too late for planting to begin. In some areas, farmers are now driving their livestock into the fields to graze on the drying stalks of crops. Some have resorted to slaughtering to save life. Jairos Majaira, a cattle farmer, speaks of huge losses.
Our cattle are dying all the time now. It is rare for a day to pass without recording any livestock deaths. Some people are slaughtering their cattle because of this.
Last week, Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe declared a state of disaster in rural areas hit by the severe drought. The declaration is meant to mobilize international assistance. However, rights activist Blessing Vava feels the declaration came rather too late.
It's a welcome development that finally the government has realized that there's a crisis in the country. However, it is coming a little too late since it was known last year, even in June, that the rains are going to be scarce this year. So it just shows that our government's lack of priority and lack of preparedness in averting a crisis and disasters like the ones we have this year, the drought that is coming this year. It's quite problematic that every time our government responds late to issues like this one.
The Zimbabwean government has expressed commitment to minimize the impact of the drought on both humans and livestock. At least 16,500 cattle have died and 75% of crops failed.
Privilege Mushwani reporting. Now, food shortage in Zimbabwe kicked off after a controversial land reform program by President Mugabe. He took most of the productive land from the white farmers and gave it to black farmers. Since then, the country that used to be a food basket of the region has not been the same again. President Mugabe recently declared a state of disaster in the drought-stricken region, but blamed Western sanctions for aggravating the situation. To find out the truth about his allegation, my colleague Isaac Mugabe spoke to Joy Mabenge, a political analyst in Harare.
it is about a natural disaster. In fact, if anything, I would have expected a discussion that speaks to climate change, that speaks to how emission of greenhouse gases is really changing the climate of this world and how really that is affecting us, really, the far where we are in terms of droughts and flash floods and many of these things that are happening. So really for Mr. Mugabe to talk politics always does not help the nation. He must focus on ensuring that people don't starve.
Zimbabwe was formerly known as the breadbasket of Africa, and now it continues to suffer perennial shortages year after year, importing grain from neighboring countries to meet its needs. What do you think should be done? Don't you think the whole issue of land program should be revised?
Let me stress this point. There is absolutely nothing wrong with correcting the imbalances of the past. What might have been wrong was to do this on a partisan line and also to blatantly not respect human rights in the process and also to do this on lines that do not really benefit the majority of Zimbabweans and not even look at the so-called new farmers' capacities to utilize the land. Those that have capacity to utilize the land must have been given the land irrespective of who they are, and those that were productive on the land irrespective of their skin color must have been left to do farming, and this process would have been done in a better way than what we are seeing now, that it has compromised productivity, it has compromised food security in Zimbabwe.
In concrete terms, what do you think President Robert Mugabe should do now to avert the situation?
Well, really, if you have been following the news in Zimbabwe, you would know that there have been reports that the government of President Mugabe has begun to ease up to possibilities of having other professional farmers, irrespective of their skin color, coming in to assist the so-called new farmers that took over the land from around 2000. Really, it's a shame that our agricultural production has gone that low, because Zimbabwe is an agricultural society. Our economy is anchored on agriculture, and the low productivity levels have really affected the economy of Zimbabwe. And this has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with sanctions. It is just about the failure to optimally use the land that has been allocated to the so-called new farmers.
Zimbabwean political analyst Joy Mabenge.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In South Sudan, it's hope against hope as the second deadline passes without the two conflicting parties forming a transitional government of national unity. President Salva Kiir and his principal political opponent Riek Machar have failed to agree on the 28 states recently created by Kiir's government. The second deadline was issued by the Intergovernmental Authority for Development, IGAD, an East African regional trade bloc that brokered the peace agreement. As the people of Southern Sudan eagerly wait for the best, the two parties continue to play the blame game. James Shimanyula prepared this report.
The setting up of the government was expected to comply with the IGAD schedule and the peace agreement that President Kiir and Machar signed under intense international pressure in August last year. Up to now, Machar has opted to stay away, insisting that President Salva Kiir must reverse his unilateral decision to divide Africa's newest nation into three regions comprising 28 states. The delay by President Kiir and Machar to compromise has prompted Festus Mogae, former president of Botswana, tasked with overseeing the formation of the transitional government, to make this passionate plea.
I plead with you, form the transitional government of national unity without further delay, restore stability, repair the damage that has been done before it is too late.
Supporting IGAD's representative Festus Mogae in calling for the quick formation of the government in Juba is the head of South Sudan Episcopal Church, Archbishop Daniel Dengbul.
Please form the government and then you discuss the issue of your 28th state, because we, all of us, the people, we are not a party to what happened. We cannot be a hostage. We should not be whole hostage of what we don't know.
President Salva Kiir and his main political rival Riek Machar signed a peace agreement in August last year. The agreement was endorsed by seven parties. the United Kingdom, China, European Union, Norway, the United Nations, the African Union and the United States, Norway, UK and the USA, also known as the Troika, played a key role in South Sudan's independence. United States representative to the United Nations Human Rights Council, Keith Harper, says they will continue to keep the pressure on the leaders.
We're going to lead efforts to continue to focus attention on South Sudan. We have to have political leadership in South Sudan. We're as frustrated about South Sudan as anybody. I mean, we were involved in the Troika in creating South Sudan, and so we have a lot of equities in making sure that it's successful. And when I say successful, I mean, is it secure and is it prosperous for the people of South Sudan, not for a handful of political leaders?
That report was prepared by James Shimanyula. DR Congo are the new African nations football champions. The DRC clinched the trophy after beating Mali by 3-0. The CAF tournament, which ended in Rwanda on Sunday, is purely for home-based players. Nasra Bishumba has been following the competition from the start to the final.
I think it's the most exciting thing Kigali has seen this year. The Congolese have taken over Kigali, the excitement, the music, the dancing. This is very exciting for Congolese. It's also exciting for Rwandans because they decided when they lost to Congo that they will support Congo because they were more excited to have the trophy remain in this region than it going to West Africa. What I can tell you is that this night, not many people are going to sleep.
Right. Now, this is the second time that the DR Congo has won this tournament, the first one being the Maiden in 2009. What is the secret behind their success?
Generally speaking, DRC has a strong pool of talent across so many sports, whether it's tennis, basketball, or even football. But what makes football stand out is the fact that the players are drawn from a very strong league with teams like AS Villa and TP Mazembe. They have players like Luvumba, Bangala, Kibwaki, who have all played in African Champions League and Confederation Cup. Then they are also very well-funded, and there is too much that they can offer that most teams don't actually have. It's not very surprising for most people that they ended up being the winners of this tournament.
What can you tell us about the turnout at the final? Was it well attended? Was the stadium filled to capacity?
The turnout has generally been very good. The national stadium has a capacity of 30,000. I can tell you that today it was almost full. It was raining very heavily, but they sat and said, we are going to watch this match. And I was able to talk to the media relations officer of the National Football Federation, Boni Mugabe. Please take a listen.
Well, the turn-up was so good. Let me take the opportunity to even thank Rwandans who turned up in large masses. Not necessary to say that they turned up where Rwanda was playing. Even when Rwanda was knocked out in the quarterfinal, many Rwandans came in to support other nations from the quarterfinal until the final. So Rwandans have shown the world and Africa in general that they have that passion for football.
That is Boni Mugabe, the media relations officer for Rwanda's Football Federation. And what did the fans and the players from other African countries or other African teams have to say about the general organization, how Rwanda organized the tournament?
Generally, people were happy about it because Rwanda spent a very long time organizing to make sure that everyone gets a hotel room, the transport, everything seemed to have been organized for a very long time. This is the first time Rwanda has hosted a tournament of this caliber because Rwanda has had under 17 and under 21 tournaments, which are considered small. So for this tournament to be brought here, this is something that most Rwandans feel they are really proud of.
Nasra Bishumba in Kigali. Up next is Crime Fighters.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there and welcome to Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. We're getting very close to solving the mystery of what's been going on in our sleepy little town of Bovo. We have to find out who killed Patrick, a young veterinarian. And we also want to know who's been blackmailing the notorious poacher, Mr. G. His identity was unknown until very recently when a video was leaked to the public. Everyone was astonished when they saw it. The detectives, Alan and Carl, have been looking for Mr. G for a long time and they are now very excited. Is their investigation finally bearing fruit? Let's find out in this seventh episode entitled King of the Poachers.
Hey, Alan, I came as soon as you called. What were you saying about knowing who Mr. G is?
Yes, he's all over the news.
But why did you want to meet me here? This office belongs to... Wait a minute. You don't mean to tell me Mr. G is...
Oh, yes, Carl, that's exactly what I mean.
No way. That's impossible.
I tell you, my friend, wonders will never cease. Come on, let's go in before Mr. G tries to escape.
Hey, sir, can I help you? Where are you going? You can't go in there.
Of course we can. We are police. Get out of the way.
Dr. Susan, I'm sorry. I tried to stop them.
Hey, Officer Carl. What are you doing here? I can't see you now. Come back later.
Quick, Carl, stop that paper shredder. She's destroying evidence.
Yep, that's it.
Done. Dr. Susan Galana. Or should I say Mr. G? You are under arrest. Carl, read her rights.
Dr. Susan Galana, you are under arrest for poaching and the illegal sale of ivory. Anything you say may be taken down in evidence and used against you in a court of law.
Wait a minute. You can't arrest me. Do you know who I am?
Oh, we know, right? You're Mr. G. Now move!
Who would have guessed that Dr. Susan Galana, the illustrious and well-regarded animal conservationist, was also the infamous Mr. G? What does she have to say for herself? Let's join her and Detective Allen in the interrogation room.
Susan Galana. Dr. Susan Galana. Defender of elephants and recently elected chairperson of the Wildlife and Tourism Task Force. Or should I just say, Mr. G, King of the Poachers?
I don't know what you're talking about, young man.
I'm talking about you, Dr. Susan. You're a poacher, aren't you?
Don't you know who I am?
Of course. I believe I just listed all your names and titles.
Who's been putting this stuff in your head? Do you realize I could have you fired in a second?
Your face is all over the TV, ma'am. Everyone can see that Dr. Susan Galana and Mr. G are one and the same. I don't see how you can possibly wriggle out of that one.
Let me tell you something, young man.
Detective Allen.
Well, detective, I know my rights. Don't think you can manipulate me the way you manipulate ordinary prisoners. I want my lawyer.
Do you know Patrick Igunza?
Who the hell is that?
A letter... A blackmail letter addressed to Mr. G was found on his computer. Now, do you know him? Did you have him kill Dr. Susan?
What? That's outrageous.
Answer me. Did you kill a man, Doctor?
I'm not saying another word without my lawyer.
We've arrested the poachers who worked for you, you know. I'm very curious to hear what they have to say.
My lawyer. I want my lawyer.
Next door, Carl is interrogating the poachers he caught red-handed with their haul of ivory.
Please state your names and occupation for the record.
We want to talk to a lawyer.
Emmanuel, right? We know your name is Emmanuel. And you're John.
Yes, I...
Shh! Don't say anything, John.
Where do you sell the ivory?
What ivory? We don't know what you're talking about. Let us go. Why are we being held here? My leg hurts. I've got a bullet wound. I need to go to hospital.
You are found with elephant tusks. That's a crime in itself. You could both go to prison for a very long time. But if you tell me where you sell the ivory and who your associates are, the judge might be willing to reduce your sentence.
You're not listening to me. We don't know what you're talking about. My colleague and I were just out hunting when you arrested us. Huh. And you shot me. I'm going to sue the lot of you.
Who's your boss?
We don't have a boss. We are just hunters.
Mr. G's your boss, right? Your faces are all over the TV, you know. Killing an elephant alongside the infamous Mr. G, alias Dr. Susan Galana. For your information, we've arrested her too. So stop lying and start talking.
We are just innocent hunters.
All right, that's enough. If you don't want to tell the truth, just shut your mouth. Now, John, is there something you want to tell me?
I'm sorry.
All right. Since neither of you wants to talk, we'll just put you in a cell to think about it. And meanwhile, I'll send someone to come and take your fingerprints for processing.
Please, get me to a hospital. I'm in pain. And get me a lawyer.
Meanwhile, Detective Allen has been speaking to the TV station that broadcast the video exposing Mr. G. It turns out the person who leaked the video is someone we already know. Now, Allen is interrogating that person again.
So, Betty, things are starting to get a bit clearer. The sooner you start speaking, the better. So, why don't you just tell me what you know?
Please, I'm innocent. Let me go. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, let me refresh your memory. You and your lover, Patrick, were blackmailing Mr. G. And you killed Patrick because you wanted to keep all the money yourself. Isn't that so?
What? I've never blackmailed or killed anyone.
Don't lie to me. I've just spoken to your friend Timothy, the TV journalist. He told me it was you who gave him the video they broadcast earlier. It shows the so-called Mr. G killing an elephant, and we can clearly see that Mr. G is in fact Dr. Susan. Being exposed like this is obviously something she would rather have avoided. We also found the blackmail letter on Patrick's computer, as well as your fingerprints. So, I'm going to ask you one more time. Did you kill Patrick so you could keep the blackmail money for yourself? Did your boyfriend Musa help you? He's a wildlife photographer. He was the one who shot the video, wasn't he?
Please, leave Musa out of it. He didn't even know I had the video. He shot it, but I stole it from his hard drive and sent a copy to Mr. G. Dr. Susan. I sent the blackmail letter, but I did not kill Patrick. He didn't even know about the blackmail. I did it all by myself.
You know that blackmail is a serious offense, punishable by law.
But I didn't get any money.
That's irrelevant, Betty. The act of blackmailing someone is a crime in itself, and you put other people's lives in danger.
Please, officer.
Well, finally, we know who Mr. G really is. And Betty's confessed to being the blackmailer. But if she didn't kill Patrick, who did? Join us next time for the series finale. If you want to listen to this episode again, just check out our website, dw.com/crimefighters. We're also looking forward to your comments on our Facebook page. Until next time, take care.
Interesting episode there. And now to wind our program, here is a brief reminder of our main stories. The UN has said nearly 14 million people face hunger in Southern Africa. South Sudan's rival leaders have once again failed to form a transitional government of national unity. And DRC have won the just concluded African Nations Championship, which ended in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. That's all we had for you today. Thanks for tuning. Africa Link returns tomorrow again, same time.